You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Julie Burstein. I'm in on this beautiful Friday afternoon for Leonard Lopate. In my neighborhood, the magnolias are blooming, and the cherry tree in my backyard is just about to bloom. The Brooklyn Botanic Garden, beloved by thousands, celebrates its centennial this year, and it's also releasing some findings from a 20-year study of our region's plant life. New York gardeners might already know this. There are some species which didn't grow here a few years ago that are now thriving. And the downside? We've lost at least 50 plant species in the last two decades. With me to talk about this study is Gary Moore, the Director of Science at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden and the coordinator of the New York Metropolitan Flora Project since 2001. Welcome.
Thank you.
So in Brooklyn, a flower that I associate more with California, bougainvillea, is blooming. We didn't see that 20 years ago. What other plants have become quite common in the New York area?
There's quite a few that have become very common over the past few decades, and some of them have come from the southern United States. So if you go to some of the sandy areas in Brooklyn and Queens near the beach, you might find a yellow daisy flower called camphor weed, and it actually smells like camphor. And earlier studies done in the early 1900s, the plant was considered exceedingly rare with us, and now it's exceptionally common.
So you're looking at plants, not just the ones that we gardeners plant in our gardens, but the ones that kind of migrate here on their own.
That's correct. The New York Metropolitan Flora Project really focuses on plants growing outside of cultivation, and so those are the ones that we're identifying and mapping in this project. Having said that, some plants that are in cultivation sometimes escape cultivation, so there's a number of plants now in our flora that were originally brought into this country from other parts of the world, like Asia and Europe, for gardening purposes, but have since escaped, and we now actually see them as part of the flora. So we do map a number of non-native plants once they escape and enter into our wild areas in the city and elsewhere.
I remember purple loosestrife. Was that one of the plants that escaped gardens and started taking up residence along?
Absolutely. That's one of our worst invasive plants. It gets into open marshes, freshwater marshes in the area, and can dominate a marsh. So you can drive in some areas and you'll see a marsh largely dominated by purple loosestrife. It's very pretty, but it crowds out a number of the other native plants that you would otherwise see there.
Now, from what I understand, the kind of wild areas have wonderful ecosystems where, if it's native plants, there are a lot of different things often growing, and they are often symbiotic with each other. But like you're saying with the purple loosestrife, are some of these things that you're starting to see finding niches that can sort of take over from our native plants here?
Absolutely. Purple loosestrife is an example, and Phragmites or common reed, that large grass, if you drive through the meadowlands or you visit a lot of disturbed aquatic and wetland areas here, you'll see that reed very common.
Which I just thought, you know, I take the train through the meadowlands every day, and I just thought that's what grows in the meadowlands until I learned that wasn't always what grew in the meadowlands.
That's correct. The settlers, when the area was being settled, that was actually what's called an Atlantic white cedar swamp. And through disturbance and through saltwater intrusion, it's now much of that area, although there are restoration efforts in parts of it, but you will find large stands of this common reed. Another interesting thing about the common reed is actually what you see in the meadowlands and elsewhere as an invasive plant is a non-native subspecies. The species itself is actually native, but the native subspecies is actually exceedingly rare. So in New York, Phragmites is actually, the non-native material is highly invasive, and the native material, we almost never see it. So it's actually a very rare plant.
Do we know how long ago Phragmites took over? Because it seems in my lifetime it's always been there, but I may just have not been paying attention.
Started showing up in herbarium records. People started seeing it in places they normally didn't in the 1800s.
All right, so it's definitely in my lifetime.
Late 1800s, yes.
Yeah. As you do this study, what's been the most surprising thing that you've found? As you look at the census of plants, you know, we're going through a census of people right now. It's wonderful to think about a census of plants. What has surprised you about the trends?
A couple of things, I think. Some of the trends we've already been talking about are surprising. And when you read flora accounts from the 1800s and the 1900s, it's rather remarkable how different it was in a lot of ways. Chestnut forests were abundant and are no longer because of the chestnut blight, which was brought in as well by bringing in non-native chestnut trees. Entire forests are gone. And because of the disturbance and because of the introductions, we now have communities in the metropolitan area that people in the 1800s, they would be completely foreign to them. We have forests in places that are dominated by trees like Norway maple and sycamore maple, both of which are not native to the United States. And in those forests, you'll see shrub layers of mostly non-native honeysuckles. And then in the herb layer, you'll have things like garlic mustard, which is also not native. So we actually have communities, I guess you would call them, that are largely dominated by non-native plants.
So in a sense, we're a city of immigrants, and we're also a flora of immigrants as well.
Yes, many of the plants coming in from Asia and Europe. Generally, you see these non-native plants, they come in from areas where the climate is similar. That's primarily what's driving why we see plants so oftentimes coming in from Asia and Europe. But as the climate changes, we are seeing some plants that normally wouldn't occur with us coming in. Another invasive plant is kudzu vine, which is known as the vine that ate the South. And it's eating small parts of New York City as well. In a couple of places, there are large populations of it.
When you look at these wild areas, do you consider the city itself a wild area? Do you look at the flora, the plants that might be growing next to the curb or in sidewalk cracks? Are those things that you're paying attention to as well?
Yes. If it's growing there without without people having planted it, we consider that a wild area. It may be as small as a sidewalk crack or a vacant lot, or it might be much larger areas, forested, what you might consider more natural areas like in southern Staten Island or up in the northern Bronx.
And did those areas, are you seeing changes there as well?
Yes, you're seeing changes everywhere. Generally, though, where there's been less human activity and where the population density is less and you have larger open spaces, there the natives do a little bit better. So where you have larger preserves, that have not been as heavily disturbed recently, then you see an increase in the native plants.
Now, you've been, the Brooklyn Botanic Garden has been working on this for about 20 years. Is this something new, or had people been really paying attention to the native flora of our area? You quoted some herbal records. How had people paid attention to this in the past?
Very early on, in the 1700s, there was a botanist in Sweden named Linnaeus, and he had students coming over here to collect. So some of our earliest records are based on those sort of age of discovery of actually describing species for the first time, collecting what are known as herbarium specimens that are, you take the specimen and dry it and preserve it and make it into a museum specimen. And so early records were just sort of documenting plants for the first time, naming them for the first time. That activity still goes on quite a bit in the tropics today, but in many of our developed temperate areas, that's largely completed. And so those are some of the earliest records. That told us what plants were here. It didn't tell us very well exactly the extent of their distribution. So that is a little less clear on where they were. But then later on, even at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden in the early 1900s, there was a botanist, Norman Taylor, and he did a study of the local flora, just as we are doing, and documented all the plants that were occurring in the area. So there has always been an interest in the local flora. There are a number of botanical societies and clubs, the Torrey Botanical Society, mm-hmm. the Connecticut Botanical Society, the Long Island Botanical Society, the Philadelphia Botanical Club. And these are all groups of local citizens, some of them professional botanists, but many of them amateur botanists who have field trips every weekend beginning in April and going on and through October to actually go out and study the native flora as well, besides our research project and other research scientists in the area who are also going out there and studying it.
Are these new plants that are coming in, I said in the introduction that they're species that we're losing. What kinds of things are we losing, and does the diversity matter to our area?
Some of the species we're losing, just to give you some striking examples, we have just a little under about 36 species of orchids. People generally think of orchids as being tropical
yes.
species, but we have, all of ours are called terrestrial orchids. They don't grow as epiphytes.
That means up on the branches.
Right, up
in
on the
air.
Branches. Mm-hmm. Ours are all rooted in the soil, and some of them are quite showy, like the showy lady slipper, which is largely gone from the metropolitan area. At one time, there were a number of sites for it. The showy species, besides habitat disturbance and loss that contributes to their decline, also sometimes get overpicked and dug up and whatnot.
And when you talk about habitat disturbance, I mean, we're talking a little bit about climate change, but is also development partly responsible for the loss of species as well?
Absolutely. When you think about development in terms of putting a building where there used to be green space, well, the loss of the plants is fairly obvious. But when you have development or disturbance of habitats where the open space is left intact, but it's been disturbed in some way, perhaps the soil has been altered by fill being placed in there, that significantly changes the soil chemistry, and so it greatly changes what will grow there. So those kinds of alterations, besides just loss of habitat, but alterations greatly influence the kind of plants you'll see in a given region, and usually that kind of disturbance where you're putting in building materials and other things for fill change the soil and the landscape in such a way that it is conducive to invasive plants coming in, and usually the loss of the natives.
Now, we hear a lot about native animal species. People can get connected to something that's furry. Do native plant species and diversity of plant species matter? Is it something we should be paying attention to?
I think so. When you think about all of the diversity you see in your gardens in terms of horticulture, all of that eventually has its origins in wild plants. So as we homogenize the landscape and lose some of that diversity, we're losing some opportunities for future research and future development of things that we may use for a variety of reasons.
Are there ways that we weekend gardeners might be able to help address the loss of species and the diversity of our region? Should we be paying attention to the things that actually are native to our area?
Yes. Many plants that we have that are declining in the area, sometimes if you take them out of the wild and bring them into cultivation, they actually do quite well. There's a rare violet called coast violet, and it's a very attractive violet and has very dissected leaves, which makes it unusual for a violet species, and it's a blue violet. And it's quite rare in the wild, and there was one site down in Cape May County that was threatened with development, so we brought some of the material that was going to be destroyed into the native flora garden. And I wasn't too confident we'd be able to grow it because the soil there was so sandy and not something we were perfectly mimicking at the garden. But it turns out it's done quite well in our native flora garden and has spread to other areas in the native flora garden on some years. So trying to get some of these plants made available to gardeners and having them garden those does two things. One, it gives another place for these things to survive. The second thing is you might be planting some of these native plants instead of planting something that might escape. A good example of that would be we have a plant that used to be planted quite a bit called Asian bittersweet. Very showy fruit in the late fall. It's one of our most invasive plants now in the wild. We have a native bittersweet, which is very similar, called American bittersweet. We go entire field seasons now without seeing that plant. That's how rare it has become. It would be better if more people planted it. It can be a little harder to grow, and that's a challenge. So, yes, there are some things that gardeners can do by looking at native plants as an alternative to some of the non-native plants, particularly non-natives, that can become invasive.
We just have a minute, but I think a lot of people think, oh, the city, I mean, it's really not a place for wildlife. But from hearing you talk, it sounds like there's a lot of wildlife here, in both in the five boroughs and then in our metropolitan area.
Absolutely. There are plenty of great places to still go out and learn about plant diversity, even within the five boroughs of New York City.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about the census, not of people, but of plants in our area.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Gary Moore. He is Director of Science at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden and Coordinator of the New York Metropolitan Flora Project, about why the city is losing its native plants. Thanks again.
Thank you.